What is up, y'all? Elliot Lane and Javi Malia throwing us a curveball to start off. All right. all right, y'all. Javi, what is up, my friend? I thought we weren't going to have you today, but you surprised. You keep me on my toes, you Argentinian action figure, you. All that said, Malia, get us started. Get us pumped up. Let's get us started off right and reset here. All right, we are in. We're in for our first episode of the week. We have some really fun guests today. So we're going to spend just a little bit of time on news. Then we're going to dive into what's happening in, you guessed it, Tennessee. Did anybody guess that? I don't know if I guessed that or not.
No one did. Okay.
We're going to chat with Dope CFO as well. Best name in finance. I'm excited for the show, but that said, Javi, we've had a string of earnings reports that we probably need to dive into. I think good and bad in a lot of these, as is cannabis earnings. There's never a perfect report in this industry.
Ah, la la. What can you say? But, you know, we had Crew Relief as the big star probably today. Stock trading lower on net revenue growth of 12%, which was a little bit surprising. Net revenue of $1.336 billion, up from a little bit under $1.2 billion in the same for 2021. For Q4, net revenue was up 14% year over year and 4% up quarter over quarter to $352.5 million. With a gross profit of $78.1 million and gross margins of 22%, which was pretty good. Adjusted EBITDA was also positive at $73 million or 21% of revenue, of course, excluding non-cash goodwill impairments and other like write-down for inventory, totaling $225 million, which is...
A lot of numbers. I'm like, we gotta cut that off right there. I will say, a lot of positive numbers, a lot of revenue growth. Big loss for Curaleaf, $370 million on the year. But that said, I mean, it's not wholly unexpected either. You know, when looking at Curaleaf and what these companies are spending, you know, they cut off some assets on the West Coast, you know, so I'd imagine that will probably affect that number positively moving forward. But any comments, man, for our investors leading into the second half of the year and really the summer. Generally, the summer's quiet, albeit we have Safe for the eighth time to chat about, keeping us busy. But yeah, man, Curaleaf, I would say kind of right where we expected, right?
Yeah, I mean, the one like positive note was from Boris Jordan, the chairman, who highlighted the strong cash position and continued intent to invest in opportunities to grow domestically and abroad. Overall, I'm pretty bullish, I gotta say, on the company long term.
It seems to be just like a natural in this industry when a company isn't making waves, it's kind of a negative. And it's like it automatically perceived as a negative. And I feel like that's what we saw a little bit with Curaleaf. What else, man? What other companies are on your docket today? We had Acreage yesterday. We had Cansortium today. You know, Entourage Health, I think you want to chat about. What's sticking out to you?
Entourage, definitely looking at Cansortium right before the show. That is CNTMF on the OTC and TIUM.U on the CSE. Significant increase in revenue, 28% up year over year. That was good. You know, pretty good cash from operations from what I'm seeing here. An increase in Florida. I think that was interesting. You know, they're operating under the Fluent name.
88 million on the year. That stands out. And that's definitely more than a few years ago. I really feel like their CEO has put them in a really solid position branding wise, branded product wise, CPG wise. You know, he's taken a very strong stance in gummies in those types of products in Florida and is fighting for market share. Market
focus, right? Like geographically. Yeah. Geographically, they're exiting Michigan and they're focusing a lot more on Florida, which I think is interesting. They're definitely challenging the supremacy of true Levenir wellness. Also interesting to see how that unfolds. But I do like to see more of a focus when companies struggle in certain markets.
You said challenge the supremacy, and I just heard it in like Emperor Palpatine voice from Star Wars, and I was like, challenge the supremacy.
It's a word that exists outside of political spheres. You do know that, right?
I completely understood what you were saying. So what else is happening, man? Honestly, we're up to 23 states now, right? Recreational cannabis. We haven't talked about that yet. I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Shoot.
Two in the last month, man. I feel like those catalysts are like, it's cool. You know, whatever. You know, another state.
We were discussing the other day, right? Though, like, it doesn't seem like any of the states legalizing tilts the federal scale. We did publish an article about, you know, federal movement where tier one MSOs were the biggest gainers on the reintroduction of the SAFE Act. A very interesting analysis by our friends at Viridian Capital Advisors. Go to benzinga.com/cannabis to read the analysis after the show.
I mean, it just goes to show that kind of split thinking, though, between analysts who are, I mean, not all Viridian's analysts, but they have analysts there that buy into the tier one vibe. They buy into that tier one growth opportunity. There are others who hate it because of the heavy leverage on their balance sheet, right? And they buy into the tier two vibe. You know, there's a battle there, but I think, you know, tier ones, it seems to me, have the sentiment when it comes to investors. I don't know what you think about that, but outside of that, we don't need to keep rambling on about this. I would say go to benzinga.com/cannabis, continue to read all your news with us throughout the day. Hit Cannabis Daily. I give you your stocks to watch every morning on Benzinga Cannabis, LinkedIn, and Twitter. But all that said, make sure you download, subscribe to these podcasts. They are fantastic, mainly because of Javier. That's pretty much it. So all that said, Javier, anything else before we get to our guests today? One more. Go for it. My
favorite news item this week was a report out of the Marijuana Policy Project, which looked into tax revenue generated from cannabis legalization. States across the U.S. have collected a combined total of more than $15.1 billion in tax revenue from adult-use cannabis sales alone since 2014, with 2022 seeing more than $3.77 billion, almost $4 billion in adult-use cannabis sales tax revenue.
Come on. That's got to get you excited. That's got to get you out of the bed in the morning. There are reasons to be happy and in this industry. It's tough. Respect to all the entrepreneurs out there. We're going to talk to a few of them today. But, you know, that there's some good numbers in this space yet.
At the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in Miami last month, I think it was at the end of day one that we came up with this figure that was super interesting, where cannabis sales had surpassed egg sales and craft beer sales in the U.S.
Yeah, I think that was straight from Brady Cobb, the man himself, where they're pushing cigarette sales. I mean, there was a lot of CPG categories that cannabis has surpassed already and will continue to blow out of the water. So that said, Javi, really, really nice bit of news to end on. Joe Donnelly, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope all is well in Chicago, which is where we will be in September 27th to 28th, bzcannabis.com. Get your tickets for our next event now. We are already 50 participating companies deep, and it's not even the summer yet. Super thrilled with what's happening for Chicago.
Can I tease some of the agenda? Or will you?
No.
Not even one topic? Just one?
You can dip your toe in the water. How about that? Okay. Go for it.
Here's one I was excited about, and it was about AI and automation in the cannabis industry. I would love the people who are watching, who are listening, to tell us, you know, what you think. Are you interested at all in seeing how AI and automation will impact the cannabis industry going forward? Do email us at, what is it, Cannabis Insider at Benzinga.
Cannabis Hour at Benzinga.com. Cannabis Hour at Benzinga. We need to change that. We have changed the show name like 2 years ago, and it's still Cannabis Hour at Benzinga.com. All right. So, Javi, let's get to it, man. We have three amazing guests in two amazing interviews. Next up, we will bring on Andrew Hunziker, CEO of Dope CFO. Welcome in, Andrew. How you doing today, man?
Great. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, thrilled to have you, man. Good to have you back. So, Andrew, best financial name in the game. Dope CFO. So,
thank you very much. We love the name, and we love the industry. And yeah, I was just chomping at the bit backstage with some of your comments on the tax. Yeah, from the company side, that tax burden is just a killer on your news reports. But then on the state, county, and federal side, yeah, all our governments are broke and they need tax dollars.
Yeah. Lord, do they. I mean, we're still growing too. There's so many states to yet provide that access. So all that said, Andrew, give us a quick summation, man, of your perspective of the space, and then we can dive into more topics on the industry.
Yeah, that's a broad question, but where I dive in usually is it comes back to the consumer and the medicine. At the end of the day, even in our non-legal monster states like Texas, New York just getting started, Florida still just barely dipping their toes in the water, even Illinois. These are monster states. You see 8 out of 10 people wanting access to medical cannabis. And I love this. I bring this up on pretty much every talk. There is nothing in the United States of America in the last 30 years that I can think of where 8 out of 10 of us actually agreed on something. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the medical side, the rec side, whatever. So we have up and down markets. We have nutty pricing of the commodities because we have 50 states. And, you know, look at a commodity like oil, that pricing similar in all 50 states, where cannabis could be totally different prices in different states. Eventually that will change over time. But the movement itself is expanding. It, like you said, two new states came on rec and we're almost up to 50%. So we're getting there quicker than we think. I know at the actually I posted a Bazinga thing from the April conference about, can't remember the bullet. It was, I think it was 6 out of 10 of the equity providers had cash. They're sitting on cash and they're ready to invest this year. Mm-hmm. Last year, not so much, but we love to see that. The tax burden is huge on these companies. I know your next guest will mention that. And you look at these publicly trading companies, you can look at operating cash flow or EBITDA all day long, but tax is a major component in this industry and it's a killer. And so you see many of these publicly traded companies burning through $1 million a day or more for years now. Not that dissimilar to some of the other, you know, high-tech industries, but I believe we'll get past federal, we'll get cannabis at least off Schedule One at some point, out of 280E. That's going to make valuations pop for sure, not to mention profitability. And so when we speak to cannabis CEOs, whether it's the small guy or girl or the big companies, you got to be well capitalized. That's it. That's step one. If you don't have deep pockets, you got to survive the legalization. And so it's a struggle. I saw my former client dispensary owner, Jeremy, last week at the mail stop, and he looked a little bit run down, and he's been 10 years in now in Oregon, and he's been through 3 major up and down cycles. He still survived and he's grown from 1 dispensary to 4. He owns part of a farm now, but he's like, Andrew, it's a struggle, you know, 7 days a week. You know, I thought legalization would come a little quicker than 10 years. Mm-hmm. So the small guys are struggling. We're big believers in that, the craft market. And we love to compare it to beer, you know, all these MSOs and big players. At the end of the day, consumers, again, 8 out of 10 of us, we don't want to just buy beer from Budweiser or Coors. We want 1,000 choices. And that's what we want in cannabis too. I don't want to be told like, Andrew, you can only get Bud and Coors and you can only get it at Safeway or 7-Eleven. I don't like that. And other consumers don't like that. So that's my kind of spiel on where I think we're going. The East Coast, we're going to see massive growth. And my definition of East Coast is everything east of Colorado. We've just got a lot of room to grow.
It's okay, the east of the country. It's fair. We should call it the East America. Now, East America. This, right? Like, if the tax burden is so high, right, and making it almost impossible to be profitable, right, from a CFO or from a financial perspective, how does it make sense to be in the cannabis industry, right? Does it make financial sense for anyone?
Well, So I was involved in the tech industry as well. And if you go back 20 years at the turn of the century, which I was around then doing CFO work, tons and tons and tons of startups, tons of them dying, getting crushed. And many companies like Google or Amazon or Facebook losses for year after year after year. And that's what startup industry sometimes take, even without this crazy tax burden. But if you believe ultimately we're going to get to this place where the tax burden is not going to be so prohibitive, then you've got to play the long game. You got to make sure you have access to capital to survive. And by the way, when I see someone telling me a farm or especially a dispensary that they're making a profit, immediately skeptical, like, oh, let me take a look at your books. Are you doing 280, right?
Yeah.
I'm very, very skeptical. Yeah. They can report a profit, but we
read that was my first alarm. There was this Ponzi scheme called Juicy Fields that blew up last year. And I was warning people for a while. And my first alarm when I went into their website was their tagline, invest in cannabis. It's profitable. No way it is. I mean, it can be profitable for some people investing for sure.
Ancillary is, you know, you see lighting companies, software companies, payroll companies, accounting, CFO, attorneys, there's lots, or doing events or whatever. There's lots of ways. And I say, yeah, the probably the most difficult is the most popular, farming or dispensaries. That's what everyone wants to do, but those are tough. Farming and manufacturers do benefit if they can do correct cost accounting under 47111. They can be profitable, but they've got to be doing it correct. I've never found a company doing 47111 correctly or GAAP cost accounting. Usually when I ask the CEO or the bookkeeper, they say, what is cost accounting? And I say, well, go Google for IRS 47111. You can read it right there on the internet. And it tells you to use GAAP level absorption cost accounting. And that will save you money, by the way, a lot of money.
If you do Andrew, that. Let's chat a little bit about positioning for companies, right? You know, you see a lot of them, you work with a lot of them, you know, who are positioned well right now? Like who are companies that we should be looking at and saying, and I'm not talking about specific names, I'm talking about more, is it the big SSOs? Is it the private smaller MSOs that are setting themselves up for IPOs when it makes sense again? Like, who are you looking at?
No, I will say, so we have in our network 500 CPAs, enrolled agents, and CFOs in all 50 states serving, lots and lots of cannabis companies. The majority of those are probably between the 1 million and 20 million range. So I do follow a little bit the public markets and just like, oh, they're just more to as content. Look how much money they lost last quarter. How are they surviving? But I'm a big believer in the craft and the small people that do it right. Like again, my friend Jeremy, I name another client, Portland, Oregon, that started 10 years ago with 2 dispensaries. He's now in 6 states with, I think, 20 dispensaries and some farms of people that they've got good capital. And by the way, when the VCs and private equity, et cetera, when they're kind of closing their pocketbooks, there's a lot of those angel investors out there, doctors, lawyers, people that own construction companies or software companies that are putting up checks for 5-10 million. I had a client that was 5 lawyers. They each threw in $2 million and had $10 million in the bank on day one. They're like, hey, let's go into cannabis. And so some of those players have deep pockets and they've got other income and they're patient and going to survive. Now we tell them you want to have rock solid foundation, accounting, tax, CFO, corporate governance controls. I'm still amazed by big companies. You know, you read the headlines, it's almost endless. Fraud, theft, bad controls. We used to use MedMen as the case study of how many laws can they actually break? how many things can they actually do wrong with a decent product? but I think investors are a little more savvy now that they actually want real CFOs in the room. They want governance controls, accurate reporting and tax. The industry's super messy still today, and it's hurting that hurts cannabis companies a lot when they're raising capital.
That's an interesting point. I had another follow-up question, but I'm going to switch. Looking at the quality of executives in this industry, I'm curious, do you think it's where it needs to be to take the industry to the next level? And I guess quality may not be the right term, but do you think we have the experience and the wherewithal of executives in this industry?
I think that's a great question. I think it's super interesting because of where we've come. So we have this huge West Coast market that really goes back decades. And when you talk about the numbers, like California, you know, I've heard it's $100 billion market. Only 10 is in the legal market still. So we've got this old market. And when I'm in Oregon, we'd see companies with, oh, like I had a client. His rich uncle in Phoenix was funded him with $3 million, had a big construction company, who was the CEO, a 23-year-old that had never run a company before, hippie, typical. And yeah, I was more the parent in the room. It's like flip. The CFO is the dad and the CEO is listening to us to protect. Now, as we move eastward, where all the growth is going to be, I think you see, like that other client I mentioned, these are executives that may have been successful as entrepreneurs or in legal. They want to do things right. It's not so much, oh, the illegal grower is coming into the legal market. It's people with pretty deep pockets that want to actually do things correctly. And they're looking for good CEOs and good teams to invest in. We have the AICPA is doing their annual cannabis conference in Boston this year, this summer. We're doing an entire segment on the Northeast of the U.S. because of the growth they're seeing there and looking at those exact topics. But I think it's a cool blend because you've got these companies, again, this company, I won't say where they were, but they were in the eastern half of the U.S., deep pockets, lots of money, wanted everything to be done the best. But what did they do? They were out looking in the West Coast. Who's good at extracting? Who knows how to grow weed? And some of these young people that may have like great skills, those people don't need to be CEOs, but can they grow the weed or whatever, be the COO or the product person? And so I think you're going to see some nice mixes coming together. People with money, pulling some of these younger people with the product knowledge. And by the way, growing weed, I know your next guest will tell you, it's an art form. It's not like, like I just need to get a cookbook and make it myself. There's not just science involved.
Definitely. Yeah. I've seen many master growers fail to thrive without a good CEO and a good CFO and vice versa. Right. You need the chops on both sides for a company in this environment to actually succeed. Right. You need to be a good steward of capital and you need to be a great cannabis cultivator.
Yeah. And that's a great point as well. So you have to have, I know that's the old saying, investors would rather invest in a great team with an okay product than an unbelievable product with a crappy team. And that's what I see all day long. And I know you all see them too at these capital conferences. We see pitch deck after pitch deck. Most of them are like 80 pages on how they have the world's best strain of pot. And there's hardly anything about the team or their controls or CFO or anything else, but they've got the best pot money can buy. And so I tell them,
Focus should have brought a sample. Andrew, we do have to wrap up and get to our next guest, my friend, but appreciate you stopping in and giving us some insight. Obviously, the financial aspect of this industry is something we're very interested in on this show, understanding where we're at. And let's continue to have these conversations, and hopefully we'll have beautiful and more abundant equity markets to chat about as well in the future. God willing.
Thank you all for having me on. Sorry I missed April, but maybe I can get to Chicago for love to be there.
We would love to have you, my friend. Yeah, we appreciate you and your support. Dope CFO, check him out. Andrew Hunziker, CEO and founder. Thank you again for joining us. We'll see you soon.
See you all.
Awesome. I mean, honestly, it's great to have those financial insights, Javi. Much, much needed. And they can put some comfort to you if you take them the right way, because it's a tough space. Earnings are tough. They always are. But I appreciate his insights.
Indeed. And I think that this conversation took a different direction than prior conversations we'd had with Andrew as well. Mm-hmm. And it like all angles here, right? It's similar. Are more relaxed, more colloquial. Other times we just focus very much on the operations side of stuff. And I think that is a good mix.
Did you all hear that word? He just dropped colloquial. Well done. He's like, yeah, I'm a writer. That's what I do. Wait,
Elliot is surprising my words today.
Surprise. I am. You're like showing me up. You need to calm down. Jeez. All right, y'all. Let's keep it moving. We're going to bring on a very cool operator in the space who's going to really, honestly, I'm super excited for this. Flow Gardens, their founder, Eric Meltzer, their chief strategy officer, David Miller, are with us to chat about what's happening in Tennessee and hemp and CBD and how we should be looking at it on our show. Let's bring them on over, Malia. Welcome in, Flow Gardens crew. What is up, Eric and David? How are y'all doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Elliot. Hey, over here. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, glad to hear it. Looks like we're all growing with the flow. I need that on a t-shirt. That's fantastic. Appreciate you all bringing that. Awesome. So real quick, Eric Meltzer, I believe you're the founder. Let's start with you, my friend. Tell us a little bit about Flow Gardens.
So Flow Gardens is a indoor research and development facility that focuses on alternative cannabinoids. So we focus on not only CBD, but CBG. We found a CBC plant, and our main focus is type 2 flower, which for the people that don't know is like one part THC, one part CBD. And if anybody has tried it, it's a very good buzz. It kind of takes everything you want with weed and everything you don't want out. That makes sense.
So. I love that. Now there's a reason I would say you're focused on alternative cannabinoids, right? It's partially where you're based, which is Tennessee. So tell us a little bit about, you know, owning a hemp business in Tennessee, maybe, you know, what's happening in the market there.
The legal situation, right, as well. Some viewers and listeners might not be aware of what's up with cannabis in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. Either one, whoever wants to answer that.
Yeah. So, I've been a legacy grower in the state for 29 years. And about 5 years ago, when the hemp started coming around, I saw the genetics were there to sell indoor smokable hemp. That's kind of the path I took. And since then, it's emerged in Tennessee. There's quite a few indoor growers. And it's a small niche market, but it's definitely growing. This year, we're seeing it grown quite a bit. So,
one of the things that I was surprised about, right? Like Tennessee is famous maybe for whiskey, but it's, you know, one of the top experts. I don't know why I was looking up this, but you know, you have like spacecraft and aerospace parts as top experts, vehicles and electronics, right? So it seems like a very tech forward state in many senses to my surprise. And I was not aware. Apologies. I'm not from the US, so I haven't been to Tennessee. I would like to though. But like, do you see any of this affecting the cannabis space? Is it like a very tech forward industry in Tennessee as well? Or what's the situation there?
So Javier, you're asking if you feel like the tech industry is going to overpower or influence in a stronger way the state of Tennessee?
Yeah, I know. Generally, like, you know, it seems like a tech forward state in many ways. So how do you see that like affecting cultivation and retail and generally the production of cannabis in the state?
Yes, I was in Atlanta for 20 years. I was born and raised here in East Tennessee. So I've been back here in Tennessee for a couple of years. We're in East Tennessee, which is not where Nashville is. They're more central Tennessee, and a lot of the technology development and curve is really developed over in Nashville. So I don't see tech overpowering or influencing East Tennessee relative to the cannabis market right now.
You know, I think part of it that's super interesting on our side is you have several really popping urban areas in Tennessee. So you have Nashville, you have Memphis. You know, I have cousins all over the place. I'm from Kentucky in Tennessee. So, I mean, I understand the area probably as well as you can. You know, Kentucky is a very hemp forward state, but you're positioning yourself, I think, in a very unique and intelligent way. You're not diving headfirst into Delta 8 gas station THC. You're not avoiding it, right? Mm-hmm. You're somewhat finding this middle ground of keeping hemp as a gateway and as an opportunity for cannabis at large. Do I have that somewhat correct there, David?
Yeah, I think so. And I forgot you're from Kentucky, Elliot, so we might be cousins since I'm from Tennessee. So
I'm saying my dad's from Portland, Tennessee, not Oregon.
And in general, your point, I'm not a huge fan of regulation, but I do think a good balance of it is needed. And that's one of the things that's kind of like the Wild Wild West here is that there's really no regulation around the hemp market when it comes to packaging, when it comes to selling those, you know, Delta 8 gummies in gas stations. And, you know, there's tons and tons and tons of vendors and people involved in the hemp-derived cannabinoids in the state that has helped to drive the economy.
Now, sorry, just one follow-up, Javi. The alternative cannabinoids, you know, you led, Eric, with R&D. And respect, man, I love that. But tell me, what is it that you're looking to achieve with that? Are you looking specifically to, is it product R&D? Is it cannabinoid R&D? I'm just curious, like, what's the end game and what's the goal by leading with that, and that being your first foot out the door?
So it's a good question. So I love building the grow rooms. So all our different flower rooms are different methods of growing. So I have a living soil room. I have a top feed drip room, flood and drain room. I even have deep water culture. And the point of that is just to collect data and see how these plants grow in different environments. And we're noticing a lot of cool things popping up. Like, for example, deep water culture, we're finding it doesn't produce the most quantity, but definitely some of the best quality, because our tests, we have in-house testing, the cannabinoids are 4 to 6% higher, and even the terpenes, you know, are higher than the other grow methods. So it's a little bit of everything. And then as far as the genetics go, I've probably popped over maybe 200 different varieties last year, and I'm just constantly searching for the next new things, you know, the new smells, the new flavors, for lack of a better word.
That is so cool. I kind of want to visit the facility now, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm super interested. Actually, you read my mind. I was going to ask you, like, hydroponic and living soil, which are two of your top cultivation methods, sound intuitively almost opposite, right? One is like super clean and the other one is like living soil. So I wanted to ask you how it affects outcomes. You kind of like shared a little bit about that, but like, can you share a little bit more insight into how it is affecting it, you know, the outcomes? And also, what is deep water culture?
Yeah, I know, right? That caught my ear too.
Yeah.
So deep water culture is kind of my bread and butter. That's what I'm doing mostly for the last 10 years. So it's where the plant's roots actually grow in water, oxygenated water. And so there's no media whatsoever, like as far as rock wool or any kind of grow rocks. And what that does, it allows the plants to take up nutrients as needed. So you can run your nutrient level up to 2/3 less than you would in, say, a rock wool or a coco. And what we've noticed between maybe the living soil and then the hydroponic is something I didn't realize. So all the varieties in the living soil room look kind of, the shape of them is like a Christmas tree, whereas mm-hmm. in a hydroponic, they take on different forms, probably because we're force feeding them. And the organic living soil, it's definitely a denser flower. But for the end consumer, I mean, they probably wouldn't know the difference one way or the other, you know, as long as the quality's there. So
that's cool, man. I mean, talk about a different way of growing than we hear. And I know Javi could probably nerd out with you for a little while on this. But that said, I do want to bring us back to the opportunity. You know, David, I know you have a business background, right? You understand finance. You know, what is the opportunity here for Flow Gardens? Getting a start in Tennessee, obviously a lot of markets nearby. You have Atlanta, you have Nashville. You know, you can reach into Charlottesville, you can reach into Raleigh and Charlotte. You know, you're centrally located, you know, really, really well. But, you know, maybe I'm over complicating it. I'd love to understand a little bit about, you know, what's next for Flow Gardens. What's the opportunity here?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, the reason I joined Eric was his passion and his vision and very clear vision. So cultivating health and happiness. So from, you know, higher order, that's what we want to achieve and what our company's purpose is. We do that through the R&D. Now, what parts of the value chain that we want to get involved in whenever it does legalize in Tennessee, and or we choose to be in other parts of the value chain in other states, if that's what we want to do, whether just we're just an SSO or an MSO, that's just to be determined. And to Andrew's point, we're being very cautious right now when it comes to 280E as to how we get involved in the marketplace, because we're going brick by brick right now. You know, there are very few hemp flower companies out there that are profitable, that are doing well, have a reputable brand, and can sell weed-like quality flower. And we just don't want to mess things up. We want to keep ticking, not at a slow pace, but definitely moderately consistent given market conditions. So, and so also to piggyback on the question you had for Eric, is one of the things that he's really focused on through how he's growing his consumer education. For anyone out there that has not smoked, consumed a one-to-one cannabis product, i.e. THC and CBD or THC, CBG, CBC, then it removes the anxiety. Obviously, this is not a blanket statement. Everybody's different, but it removes the anxiety. If somebody like tokes a 30%, you know, flower, then a lot of them are probably going to have a little bit of anxiety and paranoia. And that CBD has that great balancing effect. And that is what he has just sick research on, does in-house crosses on, and is constantly developing are those genetics. So when the consumer does become educated and realizes it's not the highest 30% THC plant that we have, hey, we actually want to balance here. I just don't want to chug moonshine, even though I shouldn't compare it to alcohol. You know, I want a 1998 cab from, you know, Sonoma, or a Willamette Pinot from Oregon. So, but we're just not there yet. So there's your long answer.
I love it. All right. So I have one more question for you all, and then we got to wrap up, but I really am interested in your thoughts on this, because that the hemp and marijuana industries, and I would say, I don't think hemp cares about marijuana right now, but I think marijuana can somewhat, sometimes, depending on who you talk to, see hemp as a threat, you know, as something that can't coexist as it is now with the marijuana industry. Right or wrong, I'm curious, you know, I've heard other people who actually participate in both marijuana internationally, you know, in CBD hemp in the US, who think that there has to be some sort of compromise, some sort of meat in the middle, because you have this great distribution. You have this great kind of minor cannabinoid research and this data, you know, Eric, that you're taking. What is the ultimate, what do you guys think is the end game between marijuana and hemp as we know it? And or where do you think we're headed right now?
I think it's removing I'll put this kindly, the stigma that's been cast out there by the government of, you know, separating hemp and marijuana. They're both cannabis. They just have different cannabinoids. That's the only difference. That is the main difference. So once marijuana can learn to embrace the benefits of hemp, and then hemp can learn to embrace the benefits of marijuana, then that right balance will be struck. How that happens, I don't know. A lot of it has to do with what laws are promulgated from on a federal level.
But you do see a future for smokable hemp and like, let's say, adult use hemp products in a world with legalized marijuana?
Definitely. I think the future of cannabis as we know it is going to be more alternative cannabinoids, one-to-ones. Mm-hmm. Once you try it, I mean, our fan base is growing because that's what we focus on, and it's... And now I'm seeing even breeders starting to breed for type 2 genetics just this year. So it's coming. From a grower standpoint, I think that's the future.
Love this comment from Maureen in the chat. Both important agriculture products with long history in the U.S., especially hemp and in the South. Could not agree with that more. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. I really appreciate the approach that you're bringing to hemp. And I sincerely mean this because there's a lot of bad actors in both sides of the cannabis space, both, you know, hemp and marijuana. And I guess I shouldn't say sides, so I don't continue to push that stigma forward. But all that said, you know, Eric and David, you know, keep working, guys. You know, keep that data coming and keep us updated. you know, I'd love to hear more about water culture growing, man.
Yeah, man. Honestly, cool. I need to visit Tennessee and try those one-to-ones. That is my jam.
Yeah.
Balance.
Send us your address, Javi. It's legal ship.
All right, Eric Meltzer, David Miller from Flow Gardens, thank you both so much for joining us. Hope you both have a great day. We will have you back on again. I think there's a lot more to discuss here. But until then, gents, be well.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Be well. All right. Javi, interesting, man. You know, I got to be honest. I'm a believer that there has to be compromise between hemp and marijuana. And you're seeing a player, in my opinion, on the hemp side that does it correctly. That does it right, you know, and I think there's a future for companies like that.
Yeah, man, I love this. I love this. And then, honestly, I'm just like looking at all their products. They look amazing. The concentrates look.
Javi's about to move to Nashville.
Yeah.
He's like, screw Argentina. Not. I'm going to go to Nashville and learn about water culture growing. This is great. All right, Javier, any last words, man? Any plugs? We always got to plug ourselves. It is what it is, but I'm going to plug Javi for him. Him and his news desk write 30 to 40 articles a day for you guys every single day on the cannabis space, benzinga.com/cannabis. Read their amazing work, as always. BZCannabis.com, as we said, for our Chicago event, Cannabis Daily, Cannabis Insider. Download our podcasts. Cannabis Daily, as I said, is closing in on 110,000 downloads.
Obama.
I'm like, oh, we are moving and grooving with content over here, y'all. Let us know what you want to hear about. We will be back again on Thursday with more amazing interviews and content in the space. Javi, last words to you, brother.
I mean, you said it all. BZCannabis.com. Come join us in Chicago.
Siri said, hey. Awesome, guys. Have a great day. Peace.
Siri.
We'll be right back.